Podcast. This is episode 116. Our guest is Kenton Claremont from Train to Hunt. But in this episode, we discuss much more than just training or hunting. We dive deeper into mindset, confidence, and discipline, and how these attributes play out in hunting as well as all areas of life. I know that you guys will enjoy this one and find some challenging thoughts in it. Before we dive into that, I wanted to let you know that we at Exo Mountain Gear just fully released the 2018 lineup for this year, including our PAX and First Light Fusion, and they're going fast. So we have a limited supply of the First Light PAX right now, and we will be doing more throughout the year. However, the next major shipment for the Fusion PAX isn't until mid-summer. So if you're hearing this now as it's released in March, you might want to act quick if you want a Fusion PAX for the spring. Go check out the full lineup at exomountaingear.com/shop. Okay, let's dive straight into this episode with Kenton Claremont from Train to Hunt. Ken, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Thanks for joining us, man.
You bet. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. I listen to you guys all the time, and it's fun to be on the podcast talking with you and Steve. I enjoy the conversations you have with people, and I'm just glad to have one with you.
Thanks, man. We're excited. So this is funny, but I was thinking about the origins of Train to Hunt a little bit, and I'll just get it right out there. I've never done an event myself, but I was just personally thinking back because I've been aware of you guys for a long time, and then I was thinking, was it Bogus at one of your events, Steve, that was like, that was the first run for Train to Hunt, wasn't it?
It was. In fact, Steve Speck is really at the origin. I mean, he was the guy that said, you know what? Yeah, come on. You know, we got this shoot going on. Why don't you come and set it up? It sounds cool. And that was back when I was with Dan State, and Dan State and I were business partners on this venture. And yeah, Steve was like, yeah, come on. Let's see what you got. We went up there and set up a booth. This is kind of funny because this is how it all started. We set up a booth. We had waivers. And we hung a Hoyt bow in like in the booth, and people were going to do the 3D shoot and would walk by and say, "What's this?" And we'd say, "Oh, it's $10. You know, you sign this waiver, and it's a 6-target course. It might have been 600 yards, maybe more." And all we did was just line them up one at a time, ready to go, and they just took off and they'd shoot target one, run to the next target. It was like a speed 3D shoot, is what it was. And the fastest guy threw it, and whoever shot the most accurate won the bow. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, Steve is the guy who gave us our break, and it's just grown from there.
I think we're going to have to dig out the footage of Steve running the course because I know it exists.
I got a great picture of Steve running the course. He was in good shape, man. He was, I think.
What do you mean was?
Well, he was training, you were training for like worlds, like or like some sort of thing.
Yeah, that was the national championship mountain bikes series that year when I was competing in it. So yeah, I was about 15-20 pounds lighter than I am now. So definitely was in good shape is the correct term.
Side note, Steve won. He beat everybody, but just said I just did it for fun and actually turned down the bow. He was like, just give it somebody else. I mean, he was fast. It was fun to watch. There was quite like Ryan Callahan did it. Steve, I think Kenton Carruth even did it. Back in the first event, there was a lot of guys who did it. And I knew from that point, all the good feedback I was getting just by having people run and shoot targets, that I was onto something. So it's grown since then quite a bit, but I owe a lot to Steve.
I think we need an OG reunion and make Callahan and all these guys rerun it.
Heck yeah.
To get some of those guys to do it, though, we'd have to turn it into like a beer mile archery shoot or something.
That could be arranged.
Yeah. So this is a question I wanted to ask, but I guess since we're on the topic of the original, I'd love to hear a bit about, obviously, not just the growth, not just the brand, not just the scope of the events, Kenton, but like some of the specific things you've learned along the way about the actual physical endeavor? I mean, you just kind of mentioned it was like pretty free form. It was kind of sprint and shoot. I know some of that format exists. There's also, you know, heavy pack work now. There's penalties, things like that. But what are some of the specific things that come to mind in terms of the big tangibles of the physical side of changes over the last, how many years has that been?
This will be year 8 of the challenge. Year 8. So, man, over the last 8 years, I've learned a ton about just the logistics of what it takes to test people accurately. And what I mean by that is when I first, like the first 5 years of the challenge, I would have the challenge itself, whether it be box step ups or sandbag get ups or whatever it might be, I had them set out on trail. So, you know, imagine this, you'd line up 3 or 4 people, you'd say go, and they'd take off and you'd never see them again. You know, they'd take off and they'd do their challenge and shoot. And you basically, the next time you saw them, they would be crossing the finish line. And so I learned that there's a better way to set up a challenge course so that, number one, it's just more spectator friendly. Number two, that there's a very limited number of challenges that you can put somebody through that are measurable, observable, and repeatable. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want it to be too judge heavy. Like, I don't want to rely on somebody, a volunteer, to come out and say, you know, you're not getting deep enough in your squat, or you're not getting far enough down on your push-up. So trying to figure out how can we test mountain fitness and hunting fitness specifically and keep it, you know, basically black and white. You did it or you didn't do it. It was a real challenge to try to come up with, you know, six, you know, physical challenges. The other thing that you can't do is you can't do actual obstacles like walls or, you know, things like that. You can do like log walks, but I've had a lot of suggestions through the years, as you can imagine. But when you have, it changes things when you have to pack your bow around this course with you. You mean you can't, you're not going to be able to negotiate a 10-foot wall with a bow in your hand. And frankly, I think it's a little bit unrealistic. I think that the thing that I learned probably that really stands out in my mind the most as far as like what's changed over the years is that when I added the meat pack event, my intentions were to try to find a good way to test people's ability to efficiently move basically a mule deer out of the backcountry by themselves. And so I started kicking around some thoughts and thought, well, I do want to test them. I don't want it to be too easy. So, I kind of fell on 200 pounds worth of meat, you know, which is a pretty big mule deer, and you're probably not boning it out if you got 200 pounds. But I thought, you know, big mule deer, small elk, like that sounds about right. And so I came up with that number and kept the course fairly short. But they had to, you know, they had to pack their pack and negotiate the course. And then they had, if they didn't take the full load of meat in the first round, which I suspected nobody would do, I figured everybody would go 100 pounds, go around the course, drop their meat at the dropping point, come back, get the rest of the meat, and then finish up. Well, the biggest mistake I ever made was at the very first meat pack. I had an ex-NFL football player who came up to me and said, "Hey man, is it cool if I take all 200 pounds at once?" and as you guys can imagine, like my first thought, the words out of my mouth were, like I said, the biggest mistake. I said, Sure, if you're man enough, go ahead, give it a shot. And of course, this guy went up for the challenge. Everybody saw he was putting all 200 pounds in his pack, and we're competitors. We want to compete. And he kind of set the precedence right then and there that, you know, even if you can just struggle through the 200-pound pack, to move a 200-pound pack a mile is going to be faster than if you put a 100-pound pack, go a mile, come back, and then take the other 100 pounds. Because really you're talking about a guy moving 200 pounds 1 mile, or a guy moving 200 pounds 3 miles. So, or actually 2 miles, but 1 mile they have to go empty. So it was like, I don't know. There just was no good way. There was nobody out there that was fast enough to prove that it was faster to just do 100, come back, do 100 again. And you could beat those guys who were loading up at 200 pounds. So, yeah, we struggled through that for a whole season. And then I lightened it to 150. And then I realized about year two, I just kind of came to grips with the fact that, all right, I do want to test this ability to pack meat out of the backcountry. However, I have to take into consideration that these guys are competing and these girls are competing. So the likelihood of them actually hurting themselves is high because of the competition setting. If I just told them, I want you to move this 200 pounds from here to there, and I just want, it's a pass fail, you did it or you didn't, then it'd be a totally different event, a totally different test than if you put somebody in a race. And, you know, let's face it, you know, hunting in the backcountry, there's times when it's a race, you know, it's 90 degrees and you kill a bull and you got to get it out. But most of the time, you know, it's a slow, steady grind, you know. So I dialed it way back to avoid people getting hurt and kind of get rid of some of that intimidation factor. There was a lot of guys, and the guys that I really respect that are mountain men that go out and they hunt backcountry. They're not afraid of rugged country. They get deep. They kill, you know, big animals and they pack them out themselves. And those guys were telling me, man, I'd love to do it, but I'm not going to risk injury going into hunting season. And, you know, that was kind of the big wake up call. Was I had three or four of my buddies say, I can't do your challenge because I'm not going to get hurt. And I didn't want anybody getting hurt. And so I dialed that way back, way, way back. So now the heaviest pack is 50 pounds. And you know, I feel like at 50 pounds, you can slip a little bit and catch yourself. And you're not going to end up on it like a turtle on your back, you know, like you would if you had 200 pounds in your pack. So that's been the biggest challenge. Just trying to figure out what works in a competitive setting versus, and yet still measures that mountain fitness or that backcountry fitness. And I feel like I got a pretty decent balance now, you know, once I came to grips with the idea of not trying to really push the extreme people to their limits through weight and mileage, and realizing that no matter what the competition is, the most fit guys, the most efficient guys, that are fit and they can shoot, they're going to win whether you're putting 50 pounds in their pack or 150 pounds in their pack. They're going to win. So dial it back so everybody can do it. Nobody's intimidated, and the winners are going to win anyway. So it's been a long road to get there. A lot of sleepless nights, but we're there. And I feel like this is a really good version of the train to hunt.
Has there been as you're talking about competitors, has there been a body type that has been more efficient? Like, do you consistently see winners that are, you know what I mean? Like, is a guy like 5'11", 160 kicking everybody's butt that's, 6 foot 230 or more muscular, more lean? Have you noticed any trends?
Yeah, I would say that just in large, most of the guys who come out and win, like win either open or the Masters, most of them are, you know, they're usually 6 foot, 170, 180 pounds, you know, leaner guys. They're built more like, I would say they're definitely built more like endurance athletes than they are say bodybuilders. That, you know, there's nobody, there's nobody coming out that like is just really ripped and big and full of muscle that is coming out and really destroying these courses. It's the typical, the typical mountain athlete that's winning these events are kind of your lean endurance looking guys.
If you take a average kind of non-mountain endurance guy, though, he's going to get crushed by weight and weight carriage. So do you think it's just these guys that have that endurance, kind of lean, wiry body type, but they've also kind of built in some ligament, joint, and muscular strength to be, you know, to perform under heavy loads?
I think, honestly, what I think it is that it's a really well-balanced event. I mean, and back when it was heavy, Mark, back when it was 200, 150 pounds, yeah, those guys that were, you know, the ex-NFL football players, guys like Scott Carr, who are like just mountains of, they're just big men, they're getting around the mountains better than, like, say, the 150, 160-pound leaner body. But the events balanced so well that that was really the only event. You know, there was occasionally, there were some guys that were some bigger guys that could really shoot, and they could hang with those guys, you know, over a course of three events. Yeah, and it all comes down to shooting anyway. I mean, that's the fact, is that it doesn't matter how fit you are, it doesn't matter how fast you are, whether you're an endurance style athlete or a big, strong guy who 150 pounds weighs nothing to you, you can get around the mountains. If you can't shoot, you won't win the train to hunt. That's all there is to it, because I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? Like, anybody can, you know, if you can get there, great. But if you can't shoot, you're going home empty-handed. So it's a very well-balanced, and on purpose, you know, I really thought it through. I didn't want the world-class cross-country runner to come out with a bow and just be able to fling arrows. And who cares where it hits? I'm just going to be so much faster than everybody. I'm going to be able to win. And I didn't want somebody who could shoot the eye out of an eagle at 100 yards and could 10 ring every single target he shoots that day to be able to come out and win. You had to have a balance. You had to be able to shoot pretty dang good, and you had to be pretty dang fit. And you know what? Those are the people who are winning. Those are the people who are winning, not the bet. The guys that are winning aren't like the best shots, and they're not necessarily the fittest person out there, but they're the top 10% in all three events, and that's why they win.
Yeah, it ties so much into what you said. Just, you can get there, but it doesn't matter if you can't shoot. And that just ties into the realism of hunting. Like, in the end, it doesn't matter how many chances you get, how many you know, encounters you have, if you just flat out can't get it done when it matters.
And that's so true. It's so true. As you can imagine, I've gotten a little flack over the years. It's kind of died off, you know, over the last few years. But initially, I got a lot of flack, and like, guys, you know, basically accusing me of saying, "Oh, so you just have to be fit to be a good hunter." No, fitness is one component of hunting. And we could talk about, that's a huge rabbit hole. We could go down, you know, what makes a good hunter, like what skills and what mindset and what physical attributes make the perfect hunter. Physical fitness is just one. It just happens to be the one that you have 100% control over. I mean, you can be super fit, super ready. It happens all the time, right? Like, you're ready, you feel good, you've trained your butt off all year, you get out there, you've shot your bow, you can shoot really well, you feel confidence, you got your shooting, you know, scenario in your head, you know, you've test yourself through, you know, the 11 months, you get up there, and that bull comes in and stands behind a tree, and then the wind shifts and it's gone, you know. So there's so many unknowns that go into the actual, you know, successful killing of an elk or a deer or whatever you're shooting, that you should control the things you can control. Be as fit as you can. Be, you know, have you know, have your wits about you. Be, you know, go to these high pressure shoots, whether it be money shoots or the Train Hunt Challenge, or do these shoots that put you under some pressure. You know, do your scouting, test your gear, test your food, like control all the controllables, because there's enough things out there that are going to be working against you that you can't control, that that I think you're not doing yourself a favor by not controlling your fitness, since that's where, I mean, that's the topic we're on. You might as well get mountain ready.
Shooting under pressure. So I want to see if there's an equation here, at least in your mind. So if you think of like the typical just encounter, high pressure, call it buck fever, call it what you will, but you get the chance, the animal's there, you have the shot opportunity, your heart is physically racing. I mean, you can feel your blood pumping. You're physically having this reaction, even though you may have not done something physically active to get to that point.
Yeah.
Then you also have the sheer act of shooting under physical pressure in something like a Train to Hunt event. So you don't have this like emotional trigger to a physical response. You just have a flat out physical response because you've been running, you've been performing movements, heart's elevated, blood's pumping. So you have this similar physical reaction for different reasons. One's purely physical, one's a physical reaction triggered by, call it an emotional event, if you will. Do you think that those are the same thing, and that shooting under a pure physical stress can help prepare you for shooting under this physical reaction to the emotional stress of an encounter?
Yes, I think that what forcing stress on your body, which means doing some sort of physical activity to increase your heart rate, and then allowing yourself only X amount of time from the time you stop running or stop, you know, doing box jumps or stop doing ground and shoulder or whatever. As soon as you stop, you know, you have 30 seconds to get that arrow off. You have to train yourself to slow your heart, slow your breathing, slow your heart rate, and focus internally in order to like figure out how to get yourself calmed down. And it's very different when you have an encounter and adrenaline is part of that puzzle, because adrenaline can give you the shakes, right? You know, like you can get like the wash machine legs or something like that. So, but what they do have in common is that that adrenaline causes your heart rate to go to spike. Your blood pressure starts. You can feel your, you can hear your heartbeat in most cases, you know, in your ears, boom, boom, boom. And you need to try and calm yourself down. Practicing calming yourself down after a physical bout will transfer to your ability to calm yourself down in the field if you create enough pressure in your mind. It's perceived pressure, right? Like all pressure is perceived, but you have to have a plan. You have to have something that you can lean on in those moments where, okay, hey, my heart's out of control, my breathing's hard, like I'm worked up, you know, I'm stressed out right now. I need to go right into my routine of calming myself down and getting this shot off. It's tough to simulate that adrenaline dump, but you can create a shooting. I just call it a shooting routine, so that you can perform that calming down process and go through your shooting routine under any circumstances, whether you're standing in your backyard, whether you're shooting for $100 bet, or whether you're shooting the biggest bull you've ever seen in your life. It just takes practice, Mark. It just takes lots and lots of practice. And if you don't do that, if you don't practice calming yourself down, I know that I take about 3 deep breaths. When I'm at a target, I'll take about 3 deep breaths and I'll stare right where I want to hit. That's it. Like, I'll get my arrow knocked, and then I'm staring right at the dot that I want to hit, right in the middle of that dot, while I'm taking my four breaths. I don't take my eye off it. I go through my shooting routine, anchor, bubble, see it to kill it, and then pull, 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 bang, and it goes off. Now, when I'm in the field, the only thing that changes is that where I want to hit is on an elk. And when he's coming in and I see horns, usually that's when the adrenaline dump hits, right? Or you hear the first big crack or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The first thing I'll do is I hear it comes. Here's the rush. My heart rate's up. First thing I'll do, as soon as I can get eyes on him, I will look right where I want to hit. Even if he's coming straight at me, I'll look right at his chest. I don't look at his face. I don't look at his horns. I look right at him, and I look right where I want to shoot. And he'll turn and go sideways, and he's just the target now. I'm just looking right where I want that arrow to bury in him, and I'm going through my shooting mantra in my head. Draw back, anchor, bubble, see it to kill it, pull, 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 bang. And I think a lot of people have some mishaps in the field because they don't practice enough at home. And it's not enough to just stand at your target, go through your shooting mantra, and have a really great clean break on your release, and man, I can shoot out to 70. You have to incorporate into that routine, how the heck am I going to calm myself down before I get this arrow off? And so that's the connection between the two. That's why I think people should stress themselves out physically, because, you know, it's impossible to really duplicate that adrenaline dump feeling when, you know, you're just standing in your backyard. The only way to do it is to do 20 burpees as fast as you can, and then run 200 yards and come back, and you're breathing through your eyeballs. Now go right into it. Calm yourself down, pick your spot, shoot it.
That's cool that the connection between the two is the mental decision, the mental choice, because you're physically reacting. And if you just are driven by this physical response, things are going to go well. So it's this mental decision to engage into a process to calm yourself down. I think that's a cool link between the two. And you're right, in terms of like shooting process and shooting routine, how key that is.
It's as old as, you know, shooting a free throw or making a putt or anything that is something that you have to do under all conditions the same. You know, it's just a shooting routine that you have to. Here's the thing. Practicing psychology is not sexy, and it's not fun. And it's kind of like stretching, right? Like, stretching is not the sexy part of training. Like, when we had 30 minutes to put aside to go out and train, we want to break a sweat. We don't want to sit down and work on our hamstrings, you know, flexibility. But it's a necessary evil, because if you don't do it, there's going to come a time when you're going to wish you had. Example. 2 years ago, I went to Montana and went elk hunting with a good buddy of mine, and we hunted our butts off and ended up last day getting up on this elk. I put a range on this bush that he was just behind 50 yards. I said, okay, as soon as he turns to walk, I'm going to draw and shoot him. Well, a cow kind of came out of the corner of my eye and was on the high side of me and was walking and walked right past him. His head comes up, and I thought, man, that's perfect. He's just going to turn and start walking to her. I knew he was 50 yards. I calmed down. I drew back. I put my pin on him. I let the arrow go, and I missed him by, like, I shot at his feet because I used my 30-yard pin rather than my 50-yard pin. So what I learned from that was, oh, okay, I need to build a yardage check into my shooting mantra, because even when you don't know how you're going to react in pressure situations until you're in those situations, you know, especially, you know, you have a bull elk standing in front of you. You hope you can hold it together. You hope you can calm down and go through your shooting mantra, and you can make all the right decisions and then things go smoothly. But a lot of times they don't. So my point is you have to practice to the best of your ability. Practice and practice and practice and practice. Calm yourself down. Go through your mantra. Get the arrow off. You know, do it over and over and over. Get out in the mountains. Test it there. If it doesn't go well there, then go back to the drawing board. Figure out what was it. It took you too long to calm down. I actually need to learn how to shoot with my heart rate a little higher because, you know, things happened too quick and I wasn't able to calm myself down and he was gone by the time I was calmed down. So I need to actually learn what my limitation is. Like, where's my yardage if my eyeballs are beating out of my head? Like 10 yards, 20 yards, can I make that shot? Like, no matter how high my heart rate is, I can still make a 20-yard shot. So there's a lot of just practice and self-evaluation. And if you're not practicing the mental game, you're really missing a big piece of the puzzle. And the fact of the matter is you're probably going to be frustrated. You're probably going to get some target panic. You're probably going to miss elk and feel like a numbskull and be really frustrated. And like probably, you know, bad things happen when between the ears goes foggy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ty, I would just love to explore this mental aspect a little bit, not in terms of just shooting and not in terms of just hunting, but just tying this back to physical fitness. Because one thing that I've noticed, you know, the more disciplined I am physically, that equates to me being stronger and more focused mentally. And I think those two are so interconnected. What's your experience with that? And how do you think that connection just plays out in general in life?
Well, I think, you know, being disciplined just gives you confidence. I think that it has a lot to do with, I think that obviously, you know, the physical attributes and the, you know, physiologically, what the advantages of just being, you know, more physically ready, you know, you pump oxygen through your body more efficiently. You're stronger. You have great balance. There's a lot of benefit to that, but I believe that, through the practice of discipline, meaning you train, you get up and train, you train when you don't want to train, you make sacrifices and you get up earlier than you normally would to train. You might train late because, you know, you needed to have some family time and you waited till everybody went to bed and you train. But this practice of discipline, will inevitably drill confidence into you because when it's time to perform, you can always lean on your discipline and that look back on all the work that you did leading up to this moment, which is going to bring clarity. It's going to bring optimum performance. It's going to just give you an advantage over somebody who maybe wasn't as disciplined in their fitness or their diet. That's another thing. I think that when people are disciplined in their training, it'll bring them to a great, you know, a higher point. But if you can match the two and be disciplined in your training and not use your training to as an excuse to, oh, I deserve, I can eat crap or I can have whatever I want to eat because I train so hard. If you can actually marry the two and be disciplined in your nutrition, be disciplined in your physical fitness, that is going to boost, that's going to lift you to a whole nother level of confidence, which is, we need all the confidence we can get when we're out there, right? Like, shoot, anything, any little speck of confidence that we can wring out of ourselves is going to help in our success level, whether it be, I know I can make this shot, or I know I can get to that spot by, you know, in this amount of time, or yeah, I know I can go down in that godforsaken deep stuff again for the fifth day in a row. I know I can do that, you know. So, you know, just aside from just, you know, just physically, you're going to be more alert. Like I say this to all my buddies from the Midwest and the East Coast that talk to me about, man, all my only opportunity is sitting in tree stands and blinds and shooting whitetail. I'm like, if you're just physically fit and you're healthy and you're disciplined and you're just a healthier person, you're going to be able to be on alert longer. And guess what? You're going to be walking out and climbing into that tree stand when you're 70. If you just let everything go to hell and you eat whatever you want, you don't worry about your fitness, you don't care about your health. I mean, you might be climbing into that tree stand for the last time in a couple of years here, buddy. You know, so there's a lot of connection between not just confidence, but hunting, you know, deep into your life and being able to hunt the places we love to hunt for a long, long time. So physical, there's no downside to physical fitness and discipline in particular.
That's key, man. I love that you mentioned the longevity piece and kind of transition there, because that was one aspect I wanted to dig into a little bit in this, you know, this fitness conversation. And some guys get tired of it or sick of it, or yeah, you don't have to do all this crazy training to hunt or whatever. I get it. But another thing I think it's overlooked so much that ties into this longevity piece is physical fitness not just enables you to do it, it can actually keep you doing it for longer, and it's a safeguard against injury when you are out there. So a guy who's not active for the majority of the year and then maybe goes out there and hits it really hard for September, and he can do that, but what are his chances of getting injured if he hasn't been active and isn't fit when he does that?
Yeah, it's a great point, and something that, you know, I believe that most people don't consider, because we're all Superman, right? Like, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to get hurt. I did it when I was 20. I can do it now. You know, there's a lot of that kind of attitude, and I get it. And I get it. I know that actually being disciplined and getting up and training is not, you know, it's not always fun. And I think that is really the problem in the way fitness is being looked at, just in general, but particularly as in the hunting arena, is that guys that are not against it, but are just like, man, I can't do that. I mean, I see it all the time at the Train On Challenge. Man, I couldn't do that. The fact is, you could. And my point is that you don't have to go out and kill yourself every day in order to stay in shape. I mean, if you think of it like this, guys, imagine being able to do just what you can do now. You don't make any gains. Like, you're as strong as you're ever going to get. You're as fast as you're ever going to be. You can jump as high as you're ever going to be able to jump, but you can do it when exactly what you can do now, you can do when you're 70. That should be the goal. That should be the goal. Not, man, I want to be able to make, you know, I want to be able to deadlift 500 pounds, or I want to be able to squat, you know, 450 pounds, or I want to be able to, you know, run a mile in, you know, 5 minutes. It's really about do something every day that, you know, is semi enjoyable, whether it be go for, you know, a walk with your pack on, go out and shoot your bow and, you know, do lunges to the target. And then on the way back, you know, do lunges on the way back and then shoot your bow and then turn around and, you know, run down your driveway to the mailbox and back and then shoot another arrow and then do 10 squats and shoot another arrow and then do lunges and pull your arrows. My point is, fitness doesn't have to be this grueling, like, anchor that, you know, it's just weighing you down every day. Like, man, this is so tough. I don't want to work out today. It has to become something that is just kind of built into something that you like to do already. You know, shoot your bow or go for a hike or go for a bike ride or whatever it might be. And that's what's going to keep you moving. That's what's going to keep you hunting into your later years. That is what is going to keep you injury free in the mountains. You don't have to kill yourself 5 days a week, 6 days a week in order to be, you know, injury free and hunt into your 70s. You just have to stay moving, do something every day.
Love it.
You know, if you oversimplify things and just look at our decisions, we often just tend to choose for what's immediately easier or going to return an immediate benefit. But that's often at the detriment of what's the long-term benefit and the long-term gain, right? So you think of simple things like, you know, obviously sleeping in, that's easier now and it feels good now. But if I get up and do something active, that's good for later and I'm investing in the future. If you can combine those two, and just like you said, find something that you enjoy now that's also going to return gains in the future, like that's the perfect place to invest your time and energy if you can find those few things and just do that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, without a doubt. I think that one of the things that we get lost in is exactly what you just said, is what do we want right now at this moment? You know, I think that we need to start a person really should think, what do I want for myself in the future? Like, what's going to get me what I want? And if versus how do I feel about what I'm about to do? Like, let's just say, for instance, you know, you had a long day, you get off work, you know, it's your normal workout time and you're just beat. You're just like, you're thinking about not working out at that moment. Yeah. You don't feel like working out, but you know, in your head that this is the best for the future me. Like, this is going to be the best thing for the future me, regardless of how I feel. I think that we're too reactive to how we feel at any given moment. Like, oh, I want whatever. Yeah, I'll have a piece of cake, or yeah, I'll have a beer, or yeah, I'll have whatever. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I think that we react to the world around us based on how we feel at that moment, as opposed to what's best for the future me, you know. And that, I guess, that would just lead right up to, you know, having goals, you know, hunting season, just keeping hunting season in your sights, or, you know, some race or the train hunt challenge or whatever it might be, you know. But it's important to have goals short term, long term.
Yeah, for sure. This is like on topic, but off topic. It's so freaking crazy. So I leave the house this morning. I stop at super early and go to fill up gas. And I get out of my car at the gas pump, and I notice this sign on the side of the gas pump that just, I mean, my jaw literally dropped and I was speechless. I wanted to laugh or cry or do something. The sign at the gas station says, now accepting credit card payments to purchase lottery tickets. And I'm like, what in the freaking world is wrong with us? You know, and it's just like this idea of leveraging the future. People who want money play the lottery, but they're willing to put lottery tickets on their credit card. It's just like, that's like the perfect example of short term, throw all future reasoning to the wind on a whim and on a hope. And sure, let me buy some lottery tickets on my credit card. That's brilliant.
That's unreal. Unreal.
It's truly. I mean, I wanted to laugh, and then I just wanted to just, I don't know, shake my head at humanity.
Well, you know what? It gives you an idea about the state of our country right now, buddy. You know, like, we are, as a country, and I'm not trying to offend anybody, but the fact of the matter is that we're too easily offended, we're soft, and we want everything right now. And I'm not saying I'm even an exception to that. I prefer things that I can grab and eat right now, as opposed to taking 20 minutes or 10 minutes to cook something. But it just speaks to where we're at as a whole, as a country, is that we want things now, we want them when we want them, and we don't think about the future at all. We just think about, how do we feel right now? What do we want right now, this very instant? And then we just do it. And that's why, I mean, shoot. That's why, I thought I read something someplace not too long ago where it said that this is the first generation where their parents will live to be longer than their kids. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, something along those lines, yeah.
Wow, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, I mean, fact check me, but I heard that right now the parents are going to outlive, but like, they're going to live longer than this generation of kids that are coming up now, because of really convenience and terrible food choices. And it's a tough world. You got to go out of your way to be healthy. You got to be disciplined. You got to be able to dodge tons and tons of things being shot at you. That's a great example. Somebody might have got up there and was pumping gas and wasn't even thinking lottery tickets. Suddenly they look there and there's a sign that says, we're now, you know, accepting, you know, credit cards for lottery tickets. And he's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to go in there and buy a lottery ticket. It's crazy.
So you brought up brought up with the generations and the younger generation, which is something I want to talk about with the addition that you guys have for the kids event this coming year, which I was super excited to see. You know, I have a 9 and a 6-year-old, and, you know, it's so cool how they just by what they see, they get into stuff. So I get into stuff and they get into stuff, and we're going to, as a family, go to a Spartan race this summer, mainly because they wanted to, which is super cool. And I can imagine getting them out for a future train to hunt event with the kids race. So what is that format? What does that look like? How can the whole family get out for a train to hunt event?
So last year we charged the kids and we put them through 3 separate events, and it was just like a run and shoot, a burpees and shoot. And then one was like a speed shoot, like shoot from here, go to here, like shoot from, you know, 5 yards, 10 yards, 20 yards. And then we added up your score. And that was, it was fine. We didn't have a great turnout. I think it was because it was our first year. And so this year, what we did is we simplified it. It's no cost. It's free for all kids. And it's basically one event. It's one course. It's going to be a combination of, you know, some burpees and some over the box step ups and a little bit of running, and there'll definitely be some shooting in there from, you know, standing position, kneeling position. It's just going to be about a 3-minute test of just, you know, something fun where the kids can come and the parents can cheer them on and video them. And in the end, you know, we'll announce, you know, we'll have all the kids come up and give them a big hand, and we'll probably announce some of the faster times or something like that. But it's really just an opportunity for kids to get exposed to shooting and fitness, and this can be fun. And kids' currency is recognition. You know, it's just attention. You know, that's their currency. If you give them attention, then they're going to probably, they're going to have a tendency to repeat the behavior that they just got attention for. You know, especially if it's positive behavior. So if we can just shine a light on some kids and get them out there and shooting their bow, and they can associate that that experience in a positive light and really want to continue, you know, doing that, that I feel like that was something that we were missing in the years past, because they are our, I mean, I know it's crazy, it's a song somewhere, but the children are our future, fellas. I mean, if you know what I mean? Like, if
cute cheesy rock ballad now.
I know, right? but man, you know, if they're not doing it, then it's going to go away. If they're not interested in it, it's going to go away. And that kind of ties into the train to hunt, the whole train to hunt mission statement anyway, was to get, you know, get an excuse for families to start training and shooting together again. Because, you know, when I was growing up, my parents, like my mom was an aerobics instructor and a trainer. And my dad lifted weights and my dad was a kind of freaky. He was like a power lifter and an endurance athlete. And, but we never did much together as a family. My dad would go, you know, do you know, 3D shoots. We played some catch in the yard or whatever, but and I felt like we did more than a lot of families do now. And so my thought was, man, if I could put together these workouts, these, you know, kind of fun little shooting style exercising workouts, where, you know, mom, dad, and daughter and son could all get together, and you know, they could relay it. You know, dad does a lap, and then mom does a lap, and then sister does a lap, and then brother does a lap. And, you know, that was part of the vision, was let's get people out of the gym doing their own thing and into their backyards, you know, having fun with their families again.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a kind of a little freak snowstorm yesterday and kept us inside, and my daughter literally was like, hey dad, can we go out in the garage and work out? And then so she's going out there and she's writing stuff on the whiteboard, like she had this little circuit she built, and then we ended up setting just a little timer for every minute, and then every minute me and my daughter and my son would just trade through stations. And, like, you know, they did it for 15 minutes and then kind of lost interest and just started swinging around the rings and having fun. But I tell you what, like, that stuff is just, you know, hopefully that'll stick with them.
Oh, for sure it will. For sure. I mean, that's something they'll always remember. No matter what, they'll remember, oh, yeah, I remember going out with Dad and working out. I mean, Jesse Wise, he's one of my directors of events. Him and his boys, they go out, man, they throw down. And Jesse's like, man, if I can just keep up with my younger sons, I'm going to be somebody someday. So it's fun. My boys are getting, you know, they're getting older. They're 7 and 5, and they love going out and training. And, you know, I just have this barn out back that I threw some sandbags and a few weights in, and I'll go out and train, and they're always warming up with me. And after I shoot my bow, they always want to grab their little recurves and shoot. And then they run with me when I, you know, when I'm doing my little, you know, 400 or 200 yard runs. And it's fun. And it's a great influence, right? And we need to be that influence for our kids. And then hopefully they'll have friends over and we can do it for them. And, you know, just change the world. What the heck? You know, why not?
As well. That's so cool. So, where can guys go to learn more about the events, check out all the dates, all that good stuff? Is it just traintohunt.com? Everything's there and released for the 2018 year?
Yeah. So if you go to traintohunt.com and you go to the tab events, you can scroll through all the events, the locations and dates. And then at the bottom of that page, there is the details to the events, which tells you like when registration starts and what to expect and what the physical challenges are and how far the run loops are and how far the meet pack or the mountain course is. You know, it gives all the details. It's kind of hidden right now. I get a lot of emails about, hey, I can't find the details. So I'm glad you asked that, because if you go to traintohunt.com, click on the events tab, scroll past all of the events at the very bottom, that's where all the details are.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm there now. There's go past the events. Like I said, there's what to expect, divisions, challenges, awards, all that good stuff. You have some programs there. I know that this could be a loaded question, but just made me think of it seeing the train to hip program or the prep program for the event itself. How different do you see prepping for this event competitively compared to just prepping to hunt effectively? Because, I mean, as you mentioned, the event, you want to be as realistic as possible. But I'm just kind of curious what overlaps there are, what differences there are, maybe for some of the competitive guys, and how that may or may not line up with just hunting effectively.
Well, it's a great question, and one that is, you know, has haunted me since the day one of the Train to Hunt Challenge, is that you can't realistically test somebody that's, say, prepping for, say, even a 3-day backcountry hunt deep in the backcountry, because we have such limited time to test these guys and girls. So the difference between, say, the prep program and a program that would get you ready for a multi-day backcountry hunt is the endurance piece, because the challenge itself is really more power and stamina. And what I mean by that is that you are going to be taught, you know, tapping into your oxidative system, obviously, because it's anything, you know, over just a couple minutes, you're getting, you know, past your aerobic threshold, and you're going to be tapping into your, you know, oxidative, you know, into that system. So if you want to be successful at the challenge, you have to be fast in your movements, efficient in your movements, and you have to be able to shoot. Because the furthest you're going to have to run at one time in a challenge is a mile wearing a 50-pound pack. And even in that mile, you get to stop twice, catch your breath, and shoot. So really, in order to be successful at the challenge, you have to be able to shoot under all conditions. You know, you got to be able to draw and hold for 30 seconds and still make an accurate shot. You got to be able to get a shot off in 5 seconds. You got to be able to shoot from a kneeling position. You have to be able to get a second arrow off in 10 seconds, like a follow-up shot. This is all 3D core stuff. And then you have to be able to, negotiate some pretty simple challenges. Is, you know, in my estimation, it's pretty simple. Like stepping over a 20-inch box 10 times is not an endurance event. You know, that's a power, that's a speed event. Doing 10 burpees is also a speed event. It's a sprint. So if you do the prep course, it's going to get you ready, and you're going to have a great foundation to get you ready for a backcountry hunt. However, with that said, I would say that if you were looking to not just be successful at the challenge course, but also, you know, coincide in your training, some movements that are going to get you ready for a backcountry hunt, you're going to have to do some longer bouts, meaning, you know, some 60-minute heavy tire drags. You're going to have to do, 60 to 90 minutes on a running or hiking or biking or swimming or rowing, where you're getting your heart rate up there, you know, around 140. It's about 180 minus your age. So for me, it's about 136, and hold that just to build your cardio, your endurance. So if you do the prep course and then add those endurance pieces where you're doing these long bouts of kind of grinding activities that simulate mountain terrain, whether, like I said, whether it be a heavy tire drag or, you know, like 100 lunges or, you know, 5 to 1,000 step ups, or just picking a trail. If you have a trail next to your house, that's, you know, 3 to 7 miles, you know, up the mountain, go do that, you know, three times a week as well. So, it's not perfect. The challenge isn't perfect because we can't test these long bouts of endurance, of true endurance. And, but, you know, I think it's a pretty good measuring stick anyway. The programs are designed, the prep program is designed specifically to get you ready for the train to hunt challenge. It's a great foundation, like I said, but I wouldn't just do that in order to get ready for a backcountry hunt. The no shape to mountain shape is closer. It's got some longer endurance, but we're working on something right now, Mark. It's called the Mountain Hunters Training System, and it's in beta right now. I got about 7 people right now that are doing it, and we've been doing it. This is week 12. We've been doing it, and we're tweaking it, and we're making some adjustments to it. And, I'm really liking the adjustments we're making, right now. And it's really to simplify things and tell you what it is. It's 3 days a week. You're doing really high intensity, like, going as hard as you can for a short period of time and shooting your bow, calming your heart rate, shooting your bow. Very similar to like a train to hunt challenge course where you're just like going hard, going hard, going hard, calm down, shoot, go hard and shoot. And then 3 days a week, we're working on that endurance piece where, whether it be, you know, like I said, running or biking or hiking or, but it's got, you got to be able to stretch it out. You got to be able to hike, you know, 6 to 8 miles in one sitting, just so you know how you feel. So that's, I'm really excited about that Mountain Hunters Training System. And I think it's going to be a big hit once it's released.
What's the best way to stip the date for listeners who are interested in that? Want to make sure they catch it when it is released.
I'm going to probably be doing a marketing, train to hunt, Facebook, train to hunt, Instagram. And then, you know, if you just check back at traintohunt.com, the site, when it is released, it's going to be a pretty big deal. We're going to make a big deal out of it. And I'm hoping my measuring stick is if my buddies will do it, then it's good, you know, because most of the guys I hang out with are like you guys, you know, you guys train, you stay staying safe, you know, and you're very particular about, you know, your hunting season and everybody, you know, and you want something that's going to be effective and is going to challenge you and get you and, you know, get you ready for whatever you got planned in the fall. And so if my buddies will look at it and say, dude, this looks like exactly what I need, then I know it's a hit. And so far, so good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's wrap up with this, Kenton. What's one thing that you are still focusing on or learning or wanting to improve in for the next year?
You know, I feel like I'm just starting, honestly. Like I never feel like...
Glad I'm not the only one.
I'm never satisfied with, like, how about this? The more I know, the more I realize I don't know, if that makes sense. You know, it's like, how about this? The more I learn, the more I realize I don't know anything. You know, I have so far to go. As far as physical fitness goes, I feel like I'm as close as I'm closest as far as my physical fitness is dialed in. Like I feel strong and feel like I got good endurance. I just want to, you know, play the long game and be able to do these things when I'm older. I feel like my shooting is coming around. I just feel like I'm one of those guys that if every shot doesn't feel perfect, then I got to shoot three more and then I got to shoot three more. And so I'm always battling the mental game with my shooting and I feel like it's coming around. One of my biggest thing I want to improve this off season is just my overall woodsmanship. I haven't spent a lot of time in that. I think I take it for granted as far as like, you know, if things go really, like, I don't know all the wild edibles in my hunting area, which I think is something that hunters should know, you know, in case something bad happens. If, you know, if a bear comes in and eats all your food and you know, are you going to pack it up and head out, or do you know how to get food from your surroundings, you know, that kind of thing. You know, just my overall woodsmanship, I want to work on that. My survival skills, like being able to eat, you know, edibles around me, you know, be able to set a trap, you know, if I need be, trap a squirrel if I have to, those types of things is really high on my priority list right now.
Kenton, man, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I know I talk a lot. All your listeners are probably like, man, that guy never shuts up, but I guess I have a lot to say, I suppose.
And it's good. I think I'm always relieved when we have a guest that talks a lot, because I think it's typically better than if I'm talking. Well, thank you so much as always, guys, for tuning into this episode. Be sure to check out the Train to Hunt site to see their training programs, events, and other resources, including their podcast. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. We would love to hear your feedback. You can contact us directly by email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And if you're enjoying the show, we would love to see your review in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you might be listening to this. We hope to see you right back here next week for another great show.